Hey everyone, I'm Phil Pringle, the host of our C3 Church Global podcast. This week, we're listening to Andrew Tyndale. This was a conversation I originally did as a live Instagram feed, so the quality of the audio may not be up to where we normally are, but I know that the content is going to be greatly beneficial to you today. Trust you love this.
Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning. How are you, Pastor Phil?
I'm feeling wonderful. It's good to see you with glasses on. I've not seen you with glasses on.
Ever since I was 46, I've been wearing them for reading. Now it happens more and more.
Isn't that amazing that it's like on one day it happens?
Fall off a cliff. That's it.
I can remember. I think I was younger. I was about 44. But I thought suddenly it was like on a day. I couldn't see up close anymore. And her long vision is good, but short vision, you know, still a bit funny. But like my memory, long-term good, short-term bad. Have I ever told you my short-term memory? it's a little bad. Yeah. Anyway, it's a pleasure to have you, Andrew, with us.
Thanks.
And we've known each other for maybe 30, 35 years. It's a decent amount of time. You and your beautiful wife and your magnificent family.
And
which
yours.
Is all over the world now.
Well, actually, they're all here now.
Are they really?
Yeah.
They've all come home.
We are the beneficiary of the COVID refugee program. And they're all home. So our household went from 2 to 10, including 2 babies.
Is that since you downsized?
Well, we downsized and then we moved back to the house, fortunately.
You would have wouldn't you? Because you couldn't have that many in your little 2-bedroom unit or whatever.
We could not.
So 35 plus years as an investment banker, currently focused on bringing funding into affordable housing and aged care, awarded the Fulbright Professional Scholarship in Nonprofit Leadership in 2014, and you're involved in multiple faith-based international aid organizations alongside of your beautiful wife, Philippa, and it's very rare. I don't think I've ever met anybody who doesn't know Andrew Tyndale. You must be the most connected and maintaining of relationships person I know of. And
or infamous.
Infamous, yeah. Well, Andrew, in terms of business, being a businessman and a believer, how did you find your way into discovering your talents and understanding how to use them for the Lord?
Well, I'm not just saying this because I'm on your Instagram feed here, Pastor Phil, but I really believe that you and C3 and the teaching that we've been under for so many years has really led us to maximize what we think God has given us for His glory. But also along the way, that means, you know, enjoying a great career and having a modicum of success. So I think just understanding yourself and understanding that really it's not me, it's the talents that have been given to me. It's not me, it's the contacts and experiences that have been handed to me. All those things are steps towards the way of saying that, you know, God's not really impressed by my career, but he's pretty happy if I can use that career for His kingdom, for His glory, for whatever His purposes are along the way. So it's really keeping a grip on yourself and not breathing your own exhaust along the way.
Exactly. You know, I remember, and we haven't talked about this for a long time, one of the great stories, I think it was a motor mower company, Victor Motors or something, when you were an investment banker and your job was to go and buy a company that had been run down, wasn't doing so well, and to turn it around and get it going again. To turn anything around, I know this from church life, taking on a struggling church. It is the most challenging experience, I think, of leadership that you can have. Can you just restate some of the things that happened with that particular business?
Sure. I would like to say that a lot of my success became was because I was tied to people who are really good at what they do. So I worked for a fellow called Philip Cave, who I think you know, and he's spoken at Pathfinders before. And I learned a lot from him about how to buy companies. And essentially, you make your profit in the acquisition, not in the sale. But he was outstanding at appointing managers who can turn things around. So we bought Sunbeam Victa. Sunbeam Appliances and Victa Mowers were together. And the parent company decided to pull out of Australia. It was the largest factory in the Southern Hemisphere at the time. And it was the factory was a shambles. This is a long time ago. But essentially, I think the purchase price we paid was pretty modest. And we inherited lots of staff. And a guy, a fellow called Bob Mansfield, came in to run that. And Bob was the managing director of McDonald's in Australia before that. And he had a gift of just being very practical. But I think it was from memory. I think the stock that we were able to reduce that was standing between all these different lines. So we were able to cut down the stock and save money. The money that we saved from reducing the standing stock in components was enough to pay for the organization, that the price that we paid for it. And then he then went on to build it. And we carved off bits and pieces of the company, and we ended up selling that business. But it was a great business and a great turnaround.
That's such a great story. Can I ask you to tell us another one? I think it was yourself that told me that you went in and bought a communications company. And they didn't know where they were losing so much money, and you ended up dividing it between the landlines and the mobile communications, and you sold off. I think you discovered that they thought the landline was the one losing the business, but you sold that off, and you sold off the mobile, and you found that the I think that's a story. Can you tell us that?
Exactly, you just told it. Yeah, people who are selling businesses often don't understand where the value lies, and they have preconceptions maybe from their own background. So in this case, we had two legs to that acquisition. We bought it, and we sold off the landline business, and the mobile business was very profitable. The second leg was that we were able to buy basically the customer base of a company in WA to add into that business. And again, we paid maybe, I think, a dollar for that customer base, but it, and then we ended up probably making many millions of dollars in the benefit of the combination. That was, those were fun days and exciting and volatile and all those good things. It seems like a long time ago bringing up those memories.
Yeah, but that great story is because it shows your skill, particularly in acquiring, like you say, making your money on the way in rather than on the way out. And I can I ask you, just before we go to this, some more of these questions about today, what do you find are the key skills in negotiating when you are getting trying to make your money on the way in? Getting a good buy, identifying a good buy in the first place, like Warren Buffett has all sorts of criteria before he buys a company, and hence doesn't buy hardly at all, it seems, until he can really make a lot of money on the way in. And so I've read his books, and his identifying is one thing. But I think negotiating is another skill that sometimes people don't understand, and don't understand the power of being a great negotiator.
So I'm glad you asked that. It's a great question. Negotiation is not probably about what people think. If you took a course in negotiation, you're not going to hear what you hear from me. I think negotiation is all about the interpersonal contact, and which is why if anybody is ever going to sell a company or sell a home, I strongly recommend they get an agent or a representative to front them, because their own emotional engagement is too deep to be impartial. So when somebody's selling their business, especially if it's a personal sort of business that they've been involved with for a long time, it's almost never the price. They ask a price, but that the price represents the value they have associated with it. if you talk, if you're able to talk with them, find out what's important to them. It's probably the brand name was one my grandfather set up, or, you know, why are you selling it? Well, my wife is still involved in the warehouse and, you know, she's 55 and I want to give her a break. And like, or you know, we want to sell there was one company where genuinely I had dinner with the wife and met the wife and she said, what are the first thing you're going to do? She said, I'm going to buy a new fridge. And I'm going, you're kidding me. This guy's been running a company that can't afford a new fridge. So that next day, Phil, Cave, who I was working with, had a major fridge delivered to their house as a gift. And that was like, that won her over. But we have we as Christians have the Holy Spirit working for us. It's not very fair, but that kind of that kind of insight, that kind of ability to connect with people on the other side, they'll tell you what's important to them, and it's very rarely price. And they'll tell you whether it's I want to look after all my employees or whatever that hot spot is for them. And that's, you're able to meet their needs often without paying the extra dollars that they are looking for, paying a fair price, but you're able to meet their needs, and most of their needs are non-monetary. So
that's amazing. That
art of negotiation is to find out what they really want, because it's pretty rarely what they say they want.
Yeah. Look, Andrew, when you mentioned people working for themselves and not ever being able to buy a fridge, it raised a thought in my mind as a pastor, which has deeply concerned me at times. I mean, because it affects people's whole lives. Like somebody, I've had people come to me and say, look, we're thinking of starting our own business. I'm a school teacher and she's a nurse, but we love landscaping. And so we're going out to start this. And I can see, you know, just from looking at them, that they're not built for selling something, that they'll be too anxious, they'll worry. But anyway, you know, they outlay their 200 grand or whatever, make a loan from the bank, and within, you know, a month, all the palm trees have died down at the nursery, and they can't move anything because they're not built for it, and so it's a big disaster. And but that's a short-term one. Sometimes people are in that situation for 20 years because they just do not want to give up having their own business, and yet they're living a life that's subpar if they would just be a team, part of a team in some other situation. What do you think are the main criteria for a person stepping out and doing their own business? I know that you are right now. I know of several businesses that you are involved in, from quitting smoking to building aged care homes, et cetera, et cetera. So, and you have those skills for running that, but it is disheartening, isn't it? It's wounding to see a person try and run their own business for the sake of freedom, I guess. But in my mind, they're working for the worst boss in the world, because themselves, they're going to take that work home with them every night and live on a shoestring and think, wow, whoopee, I've got my own business, you know?
Yeah. So I think when the lessons we learned from international microfinance, where we lend small amounts of money to small businesses, is that truly probably 9 people in 10 would rather just make a living. And 1 in 10 is what I would call a true entrepreneur, who's got the risk-taking appetite, and got the skills to harness other people and pull towards and lead in that way. So I don't see any reason why more than 1 in 10 in Australia would have those kind of entrepreneurial skills. People have an ambition for it, but you've talked many times about the difference between ambition and capacity. Look, I'm going to encourage people to think differently a little bit about some of the opportunities coming up in COVID, but there's a very big difference between operating in faith and in foolishness. You know, God uses your strengths, your abilities, your contacts, your experiences, your partnerships. It's very rare, for example, from a gardener to become a banker, even if he wants to, or a banker to become an architect or a race car driver. Just, you know, God has built a set of platform foundational stones in your life. Build on that, you know, and if it's not entrepreneurial, if it's not a history of successful risk taking, then stay away from it. It's only going to come back and bite you. You know, yeah. Taking good counsel, asking people that you trust and your pastor, and praying about it. God'll stop you from going into something if you're open to it. He'll stop you from going to something that's going to kill you. He looks after you.
That's brilliant. So, talking about the COVID, you've mentioned that a couple of times, the lockdown, and what opportunities or what situations we can actually find ourselves not just surviving but flourishing in. Let's explore that those sort of thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, so I think the first thing that we should think about is, and look, all of these are food for thought. I don't want to be prescriptive, and I don't want to make any recommendations here. This is just food for thought in the middle of what other people are seeing as devastation. And Pastor Bill, lots of this you're going to recognize because it comes largely from you. But we are people of hope, and we should live life in the expectancy that God has something special for us. Not that he's going to abandon us or forsake us, but he's going to finish what he starts in us. That he has plans that we have, that he has plans for us, which are way better than anything we could ever come up with. They're going to be fulfilling. They're going to be rewarding. They're going to stretch us. And they're going to, in some way, play into this whole role of the kingdom. And that way, they're going to be terribly satisfying. So we should assume that opportunities are going to arise. And we should look out with expectant eyes. And we should be speaking to God all the time about, hey, is that an idea? No, that's not a good idea. That's an idea. We should pursue that. And so, this COVID situation is going to change many, many things. And just the obvious ones, for example, I don't think commuting is ever going to go back to the way it was before. I think people are going to work from home at least a couple of days a week. That has huge, huge implications for office rent, for car parking lots, for transport and commuting infrastructure. I would not want to be investing in an office real estate investment trust right now. I just don't know where that's going to go, right? But there's some obvious things that will benefit. For example, telemedicine or anything online. Technology. Interestingly, I think resources haven't skipped a beat because I think notwithstanding that a number of sectors are going to be down, we still need the basics for steel, for all of the things that resources come up with. I was sort of, in preparation for this talk, I've been sort of accumulating people's opinions along the way that I thought sounded good. And for example, inflation is the inevitable outcome of funding a recovery with enormous deficits.
Right.
And the implication of that is it's going to push prices of real assets up, and particularly in a world where there's cheap debt. So real estate, I think, is going to continue to go very well, not offices, but all the other real estate. Is going to go really well in this environment. I think gold will probably go well as a result as well. Some sectors are going to get smashed. I think banks are going to have a very, very hard time with bad debts and with defaults and with companies going broke. Luxury goods obviously have taken a big stutter step. Hospitality and travel, unfortunately, unless it's playing to a domestic market, it's going to take a long, long time to come back. One of the terrible things is that universally experts are saying that they expect mental health to really, mental health illness to really soar. And some people have estimated that the suicide rate might grow by 50%, which is just terrible. But it's also something that we as Christians should be looking at addressing solutions for. This is our kind of moment to shine. And the automatic kind of response to this, the human response is to curl up and go into kind of an austerity mode, batten down the hatches and see it through, it'll come back eventually. But I've seen a couple of people who've done almost the opposite, and their examples have been really refreshing. So there's a friend of mine who advises companies on their office needs. He just makes money by advising them about you know, when do I move from these floors to those floors, and which sector should I be in? And he sent a note to all his clients saying, you can have my services free for the next 3 months. Mm. And it's kind of the opposite of austerity, right? He's generous and open and giving. And in fact, what he got was a whole bunch of his customers coming in, and he's never been busier, which is, you know, difficult, but it means that his customers have total loyalty to him because of his generosity of spirit in doing that. We see we see local GPs here in Mosman who've pivoted where they've moved to telehealth consultations for all the regular items, the things they don't need to see you for, which turns out to be maybe 80% of them.
80%, yeah.
Yeah. And they've dropped the copay, so they just do the Medicare charge. And they've offered drive-by COVID testing, so you don't have to get out and go into a doctor's office.
Right.
They'll come out to you on the street and test you.
Yeah.
And they've worked out the system of electronic prescriptions and the chemist delivery for older people who can't get out or scared to get out. So there's lots of, you know, there's lots of ways that organizations have risen to the occasion. And I just mention a couple of resources that people might find interesting. So social enterprises, which are, you know, small businesses generally that have a really good social outcome as well as being on a business model. So you might think about, you know, Lighthouse or C3 Cares even, but some of the other social enterprises. Well, for example, Westpac Foundation and the Social Impact Hub and Social Traders have got together with Minter Ellison and BCG, so big names, and they're giving pro bono services, finance, business strategy, HR strategy, so that these social enterprises can pivot their business model and develop more income streams. And they get a dedicated support team for 3 to 6 months. And I think we've arranged to put some of the links that I've been mentioning, I will mention, up on the story later on. There's a virtual conference now for social enterprise. It's called Starting Good. And we got 10 days of global leadership talks. They're the it's the social enterprise equivalent of Presence. incredible speakers and great, valuable. And it's all for free. So this is
amazing.
A time when people are really recognizing the need and coming to the
Even though it's been a terrible time for so many, with, you know, so many people dying and so many people getting, you know, fearful and anxious, there is a huge upside on the planet. It seems to me that compassion levels and generosity levels in the secular world, as well as in you know, the Christian world, is generally, that's expected that they're going to respond in that way. But it, like you say, the amount of compassion that has been expressed from unexpected sources. And so this is a really great moment. And when we say opportunity, it's generally that's put in the context of don't miss the opportunities in this crisis, in brackets, the hidden thought is to make a lot of money. But actually, if we could pivot that around to don't miss this opportunity to grow as a human being, to grow in the world of compassion, to actually move into maybe a new era of generosity. If you've got a capacity such as Andrew Forrest, I mean, his generosity, just exceptional. And I mean, he has the resources, but on a ratio level, if we ourselves can just reach out, and even in terms of supporting your local businesses and these kinds of things, that though they may be smaller issues of compassion, but they are still a really good community feeling has come out of the whole experience.
Yeah, and Pastor Phil, I think that any business that people go into to make a lot of money, they may or may not make it, but that's not really where they should be going. But any business that goes to serve people, to meet their needs, that business is going to make money anyway. Just in the
exactly.
So I totally agree that we should be all focused anyway on serving people, meeting their needs. And there's a whole bunch of needs and a whole bunch of people to serve out there. You know, one of the couple of fun examples I was going to give about exactly that point, actually. This is a bizarre fact, and we in Australia forget how well we have it, but 27% of Americans do not have broadband at home. That's phenomenal. So what's happened? You know, like if you think about this 2 months, you know, with school or job applications, even unemployment applications have to be online. You know, that and white collar workers working from home, they have to have broadband. And if they don't get it, they can't get it.
That's like nearly a third of the population. That's like nearly 100 million.
I know, it's unbelievable. And so some cities have responded with buses that have Wi-Fi extenders that meet 200 meter distance, are driving around poor neighborhoods and allowing people to plug in. Libraries and government buildings have turned their routers around and put them in the parking lots so that people can drive in and use them. And in Vermont, the city, one city used empty train stations for Wi-Fi hotspots. So people can go walk in there, sit down on one of the benches and use Wi-Fi hotspots. And what there's a group, there's a nonprofit group funding Wi-Fi into rural churches so that it draws people into those community spaces. But it also, you know, we talked about, you know, I'm aware that some people need employment and they need employment now. And there's just a couple of quick responses. There's going to be an enormous demand going forward for regular disinfecting and cleaning of office buildings, of public spaces, particularly health. But I think every office is going to have its every company is going to have its office and public areas disinfected, not just cleaned and vacuumed, but disinfected, I'd say, weekly now. Yes. And that is an enormous business opportunity for people to be involved in. Yeah. You know, just a simple one like that. There are some great resources out there that I ran across. There's a group called Beyond Prof that normally does everything for money. They're now doing things for free, and they have a great job. It's called Hints for Job Hunting, and job searching through COVID-19 is a blog piece that they've got. I'll put that up on in the links as well. And there's a whole piece that they've done, which is tips for informal interviews by phone. So how to apply for a job when you're not really applying for a job is to talk to somebody, learn all about their business, in the course of the conversation, express interest and how how all your skills match. So it's a job interview and a job application without actually applying. and it very clever stuff. And there's one fellow called Paul Brunson, who is brilliant, who has dreamt up 56 new ways of creating income for low-income people in the recession. So, and he's divided them into four sections, where if you have no money and no skill, but you need cash today, you have some skill and you want to expand your experiences for your CV. So four sections, and it's everything from pay-to-click sites that they have, or user testing, or market research, selling your photos. If some of you are great photographers, you can sell it to stock photos at Adobe, for example, and make money. And one of the things that I was amused about, he said, one thing you can do is become an online tutor. And I was smiling because my daughter and her fiance have done exactly that. They turned around and their background's in tutoring and teaching, and they've just set up a little online tutoring business. And it's, you know, if you have low overheads, it only takes three or four clients before you're kind of break even in a way.
Amazing. Yeah. I mean, for some people, they don't step out in these areas because of a variety of reasons. At the beginning of this session, I was talking about decision making, and I've been doing a few notes on it as a trying to compile a message about when was the last time you thought of doing something, but you didn't do it because you didn't think it was a smart enough idea, or because you were nervous of rejection, or you didn't want to face the resistance, and then somebody else did it and made a huge success of it. I mean, how many times has that happened in your life and you're kicking yourself, or else you even did start to do the thing, but then you didn't exploit it to its full opportunity? There's a king in the Bible who only shoots three arrows out of the quiver when the prophet says, you know, fire away. And he doesn't empty his quiver. He doesn't give it 100% shot, and therefore it doesn't come off for him. And I think that all these things you're talking about are phenomenal ideas. I know a pastor in Taiwan who has encouraged all of his congregation, every one of them, to have a Facebook business. And he says, even if you've only got three clients and you're teaching them how to be a barista or teaching them how to, you know, cook noodles. I mean, you don't have to cook everything. Just you be a noodle cook, or chicken noodle cook or something. And he said, through that connection, share Christ with them and lead them into the church. And they've found that to be an astonishing way of just reaching people, as well as starting a business.
Yeah, I agree. I you know, with the added caveat of what we said before about not being foolish, you know, don't punt the house and everything on something that you're not right. qualified to do. Test it and try it, and you know, the truth is that 5 out of 6 small businesses go, you know, if you go broke, you pick yourself up and start again, and the 6th one's going to be absolutely fantastic, because you will have learned a whole lot along the way. But you know, if you're stuck at home and not working from home, what's the downside in, you know, teaching yourself an online course, of volunteering for people that, you know, need that help, of starting a Facebook business, you know, figure out your way around. And it's, look, there's no downside other than, you know, giving up on watching Netflix. I think absolutely make the time useful, make it helpful, make it interesting and exciting.
Exactly. Hey, Andrew, we're going to finish in a couple of minutes. We don't want to take more time of people than they want to give, you know, that is available to them. But any, you know, final thoughts? I know you wanted to mention some links and things. Where can people get a hold of those?
So I think they're going to get put up on your story and on my story, just a series of links. Take a snapshot of the page, and then go search them out. Many of them may not be relevant to you, but some of them might be. And these are people out there who are trying to help people by giving them ideas and just a whole series of resources. So I'll put up maybe 10 or 12 and people can have a look at them. But you know, there's, in the midst of the darkness, there's also companies hiring like crazy. So Amazon is right. Got 300 jobs they're advertising. You know, you think about all the delivery services for Woolies and Kohl's and Aldi, and even all the supply chain where, you know, they're stacking and doing all those things. There is work out there. There's, you know, go and hunt it down and go and get it. If you've got a job to go back to, then use this time to teach yourself some things, get some experiences, expand your CV, take online courses. And if you don't have a job to go back to, this is a great time to be thinking about how the world's going to be different and how you can respond to that difference.
Exactly. I think, you know, I'm just going to take a couple more minutes. It's only 7:31. I'm sure everybody's got at least a couple minutes, and I'd love you to have some final thoughts, you know, for a minute or so. But I think I was listening to a gentleman the other day. You probably heard of him, Tim Keller, the Presbyterian minister in New York. And he was saying this is judged to be the least resilient society in Western world ever, that our capacity to withstand suffering and to not complain and to understand how to go through it is at the lowest. And I think this can be an opportunity, of all the opportunities that we could take advantage of, to develop character and resilience and the ability to maintain enthusiasm even in, you know, difficult times, and to keep a head that's looking heavenward and has hope in there somewhere, that can see ways through rather than just collapsing on the floor and saying, I give up, and I'm just going to start drinking more and, you know, bail out. I think that to get steel in our spine at this stage and develop a thing called resilience and persistence and perseverance is a really great opportunity.
It's a great opportunity, and there's some really bad news. And that is the only way to become an overcomer is to overcome something, as you pointed out last week. And the only way to build patience is to be patient for something. And the only way to build resilience is to resist something. You know, it takes hard work. And this is a great opportunity because, you know, the world's going to be different on the way out the other side. And you can be one of the prepared ones, or you can be one of the damaged ones who just never recovers. We saw people that I worked with in 2008 who bounced back and who were, you know, excited about going forward, forget about what they lost. And there's other people 10 years later who still, I won't meet them anymore because they still want to talk about how those guys ripped me off and how I lost all my money. And I mean, that was 10 or 12 years ago. Give it a break, you know, and move on.
Yes.
And you have to move on. You have to move on. Yeah. And God is the God of looking forward, not backwards. So this is about,
fantastic,
stepping into your future, stepping into your future.
Any final words before we sign off, Andrew? Thanks for being with us.
Stay in church. This is where you get taught all the good stuff.
Exactly. Great word. We love you, man. And thanks so much for being with us today. The people really appreciate it. I can see their comments on the screen. Really loved it. And we look forward to next Wednesday morning, people. It's going to be a great time at 7 a.m. God bless you. Thanks a lot.
Well, guys, thanks for tuning in. Andrew certainly has a lot of wisdom, and I've known him for many years. He's a solid, faithful believer in a great marketplace ministry, without any shadow of a doubt. Also a very successful business person. Hey, guys, looking forward to sharing with you each week. Why don't you tag a friend and let them know about the podcast? And please don't forget to rate us and to review so that we know how we're doing and how we can improve. Look forward to talking with you again next week. God bless you.